Good morning, everyone. Microphone's on. welcome, and first of all, thank you for XWiki to organize this dev room. My name is Sander van Doren, and today I'll show a bit of the things that we've done during the last few years for a project at the European Commission. My colleague is here as well. I might pass on some questions to him. So it's a project that we've been doing for a few years, we discovered some interesting things with integrating a knowledge graph with a CMS. So who am I? My name is Sander. I live close by in Leuven. I'm an independent consultant, so I'm not representing the European Commission here in any way. It's just some of the things that we did there. I'm working there on software architecture, apart from that, I'm intrigued by all sorts of complex systems. So these are the contexts. I put the slides on Penta, but I noticed that I forgot to put the file extension there. So if you would download them, just put PPTX behind. I tried to change it, but the system, it was a bit overloaded this morning, so I lost that opportunity. So the place where I work is ISA. It's a unit that promotes everything open from the European Commission side. So we work on open source projects. The goal is really to promote interoperability between public services. So that can be on data models, but one of the things that we have is the interoperability framework. We have a reference architecture that supplements that framework. All of these things are clickable in the slides, but I'll skip quickly through it because there is not a lot of time. The main thing I wanted to point out here is JoinUp, because that's the action that actually where we did all of this work for. And that's the content management system that is based on Drupal. And one particular thing that might be of interest to you outside of the technology behind it is the licensing assistant that we have on this platform, which is sort of a wizard that helps you in selecting an open source license. So if you want to see based on the criteria, it helps you determine what is the best license for you. So a quick agenda, what are knowledge graphs? How does Drupal and the CMS world integrate with this from how we put everything together in one system architecture? So the how things relate to each other, some conclusions, and then the question and answers. Knowledge graphs. Well, what is a knowledge graph? I don't know how familiar people are with the concept, but I'll try to explain quickly what goes into it. It is, in fact, a list of statements, and a statement can be something of the form AW1120 is a room in ULB, and you will see that I underlined parts of the statement, and another part is in italics. This is really to indicate that, in this small sentence, in this statement, there is a subject, there is a predicate, and there is an object, and I'll come back to this later. Are knowledge graphs something new? Absolutely not. They're sort of rebranded of what the semantic web was in around the 2010s. So somebody at Gartner decided that it was time for some new terminology and introduced knowledge graphs. The big difference with the 2010s is that at least now there is a decent set of tooling around the whole concept. So now you can really work with these things. So we have statements. If we throw these statements together, they form a graph, and that is our knowledge graph. You'll see different kind of terms thrown around, so linked data, linked open data, semantic web, knowledge graphs, RDF. All of those things are just, you know, synonyms for the same thing. Well, they're not 100%, but they cover the, if you look around on the web, these are all sorts of terms used for the same kind of IDs. Everything in knowledge graphs, and that is what this makes it particularly interesting, is based on standards. While a lot of graph databases, to think the Neo4j's and the, they are based on very loose, well, they define their own standards, and but what we use on the semantic web is really W3C standards, like, yeah, you would have HTML, but so the information itself is described in RDF, and that is a specification which is which makes it very robust and, I mean, very portable. So we have RDF, that is the specification that defines how you can express statements within a knowledge graph. We have, of course, those statements. We can make arbitrary statements, but things get a bit more interesting if we put things in a data model. That's how, where RDFS and OWL come in. They allow you to express classes of things and how you can instantiate things. You need a way to query all of this madness, and that is what Sparkle is. Sparkle is also very standardized, so it's a standardized query language that allows you to query RDF data. And really what it all comes down to is RDF is to information on the web, what HTML is to documents. Documents express are a way of expressing information about a resource. So an URI on the web is a universal resource indicator, so it's really the identifier of a resource, and a document is a way of representing a resource. And the same way we can represent a resource with a document, we can also represent it with RDF. So a machine-readable version, so the information is readable for the machines, instead of HTML documents that are readable for humans. How does RDF work? If we see here our table of beers, some might be familiar of yesterday evening. What we do to express a tabular form in RDF is we take our ID, we form it, we turn it into a URI, so we put something, it looks like a URL, but it doesn't necessarily point to a document on the web. We take our column name and we turn that into our predicate, and then we take our value of the thing and that we transform into an object. So in RDF, we always have this form of subject, predicate, object. And this way we can describe whatever information that we want. Sometimes this can get quite big because you have to be quite verbose in your in statements. But in the end, you can, with this simple format of subject, predicate, object, you can model the whole world. Objects is important to point out. Everything here, subjects and predicates and objects, can always be URIs. So subjects and predicates have to be URIs. Objects, on the other hand, can be either a URI or they can be an XML type, like a date time or something of that. Yeah. Then, what's all of this about? Well, the magic is really in the URIs. Since, well, you make a statement, it's somewhere on the, you make something, a statement starting, describing the world with your domain name as the first part. If you then, if somebody else makes, this is describing data in another domain, well, you know that you'll be able to merge everything conflict-free because, well, you just have a list of statements on one hand, you have a list of statements coming from another place, and you can concatenate the two together. What is another very interesting aspect of having these things displayed or represented with facts or statements is that you can build your applications in a way, because they operate on this graph of data, in a way that they ignore everything that is that it cannot understand outside of the data model. Now, RDF, we can represent it in multiple ways, or XML, JSON, Turtle, or any other sort of serialization. So if your web service works with JSON, you could add a bit of context and transform it into linked data or graph representation. I'll have to speed up a bit. Why would you want to do it? Well, this idea of applications, separating your application from the data is very important. Instead of putting logic in your application layer that knows how to interpret certain structures in your database, everything is directly expressed in the data itself. And then, as I already mentioned, well, you have this possibility of ignoring facts. So you can really subclass or make application profiles of a data model and sort of specialize them for your application context. So a very generic standard, and then make something for your application, add the missing parts, and then this data can still be interpreted by applications that work on this generic data model by simply ignoring the things that that you stated that they cannot understand. Now, well, yeah, the obvious things that big corporations are using knowledge graphs for now are the interactive assistants like the telescreens of Amazon, the things you can talk to, Alexa. Then of course Google uses it to improve search because, well, modeling knowledge and relating things to each other, you can greatly increase your insight in how the world fits together. And, well, chatbots are another example. So this is how you express a query. I'm just going to speed up a bit. Coming to the Drupal part of things, what did we do? Well, we have this project called JoinUp, where we have this catalog of reusable solutions, open source. We try to express everything there in a machine-readable format so that people can also reuse our catalog. And it is really a federated portal, so there are member states of the European Union that have their own catalog, and we harvest data from them and throw it together into one European catalog. It's licensed under UPL, and it's open source. If you grab the slides, you can click on all those things and get to the GitHub page. So what was really the thing that were required of us, the team that was responsible of the implementation? Well, the solution had to be free and open source. We had the requirement that our project had to be open source, which is always, of course, very nice. Drupal was part of the requirements because there is a lot of knowledge in the European Commission on Drupal. They know how to host it. Well, if you have a stack like this, try to reuse it. We had to publish our data as open data, so hence the RDF part. And then harvesting of other catalogs, so integrating data sources. And of course, well, the whole solution had to stay compatible with the contributed modules in the Drupal ecosystem. So that was another thing that we wanted to safeguard. What did we do? Well, we swapped out the database layer of Drupal. So we wrote our own ORM, let's say. We made a module that plugs into Drupal and that simply, instead of doing SQL, it does Sparkle, and since it's Drupal has a quite well-defined database abstraction layer, we can now express the same type of queries in the ORM as it would go to a SQL database. So whenever we hit save on a form, it just goes to the Sparkle, to the triple store database that stores everything in RDF instead of. And that was really our goal, was not to store any linked data concepts outside of the infrastructure layer, not to use any of those concepts. So it's a normal Drupal site from the outside, only on the infrastructure layer we have linked data things. I'm gonna skip this. Coming to it's not very readable. The resolution got to me. But what you see here is on the right side, we have two databases that we use. We store part of our content in a relational database and part of our content in a triple store database. And everything fits then into the CMS system. And we had to do a bit of trickery because, well, if you have two completely different database technologies, things get a bit tricky if you have to do a query. So in the end, we decided to, well, let's index everything in Apache Solr, and we run our queries against Solr. And then when we do object loads, we just get them from the database. And that worked out perfectly fine. We also have a copy of this triple store database that we put out in the public, and there we have our public Sparkle endpoint, so you can go and query this. So quickly, some lessons learned. Our objects, well, everything all loads from the database. We, since Drupal likes caching, we ended up with a Redis server, so also our objects gets cached in Redis. And our queries go to Solr. So in the end, the database, the triple store database and the MySQL are just sitting there being idle. Only when somebody saves something, something gets written there. Of course, what I think is the huge potential for big organizations is this ability of extending data models and still being compatible with the base data model. So imagine you have 200 websites in an organization. Every organizational unit has a different notion of what a news item means. This one director wants to have a subtitle on his news. You can accommodate for this and still operate. You can query on the corporate level with a shared data model. And on the local level, those specific websites can use their specific models. It's awesome for data integration. So our data coming from the member states, we can just pipe it through and get it all in our triple store database, of course, with validation in the process. And working with reference data, like we have code lists of countries, languages, these kind of things, it's really enjoyable because we can simply remove everything related to a certain topic and replace it with a new version, and everything is still there and working. Now let's have a round of questions.
Thank you. So we have 7 minutes for questions.
Yep, excellent. Okay, great.
When you say that you use both a relational database and a triple database, is it simply a matter of everything that the system knows, the ontologies that it knows, is the relational database and all the predicates that we don't know are the triples, or is it more complex than that?
No. So the question was, is everything stored in every database, and or if the data that we cannot express in a relational model stored in the triple store, or where it goes, what kind of data? The reality is that we have a part of our data model that is standardized. We use ADMS AP, which is a sort of DCAT AP variation. And all of the entities that are described in this model, we store in the triple store database. Everything else, news, events, they go to the relational model. it was, if we would have the tooling that we built now when we started, probably we would have expressed everything in RDF. But at that time, it was very difficult to rely on the thing, and things like versioning are also not so easy in RDF, and that's why we decided to make the split. Yep, maybe.
Which triple star
do
you use?
We're using Virtuoso, the open source version. It was what we got our hands out at the time, and it was working fine. So there's, I think by now there are better products on the market, but it works fine. Well, Virtuoso works well. It scales pretty well. It's still one of the most performant ones. It's just that the documentation is horrible. So that was more the challenge than you had a question.
So you mentioned that you use Solr for queries, right?
Yeah.
Does that mean Solr, of course, is document based? Does that mean that you have relatively simple queries to work with? Or have you also been supporting Sparkle endpoint, for instance?
And
if so, how?
Excellent.
So
the question was, can you do everything with Solr because it's a document database and you sort of lose the expressivity of Sparkle, if I can summarize it. Well, we have parts, since we don't have everything in our triple store database, we had to do something. Drupal works very entity based anyhow, so it's more a natural document model, I would say, than really graph data. So it is already puts a bit of an opinion on what your graph will look like. But what we do offer is so we have the one database, we have the other database. Both of them have their query layer from Drupal. On top, we have an object model that is similar, that is the same for both of them. They're just entities in the CMS. We index everything in Solr, our queries don't go pretty wild. It's more retrieving things related to, it's just simple things, actually. For the querying, the Solr, the Sparkle querying, we do offer a public Sparkle endpoint, which is a copy of a subset of all the graphs we have in our main triple store. So there you can, everybody who wants to have the fine-grained Sparkle things can use that. Any other questions? Or can we start switching?
Thank you.
You're welcome.